It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Wednesday, August 27th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. This week, the World Health Organization shut down a laboratory in Sierra Leone after a worker there was infected with the Ebola virus. As organizations try to fight the outbreak, one of the biggest concerns is where it will go next. And some researchers think following the regular movements of people in the region could be informative. How do you accurately track the movements of people in West Africa? Track cell phone movements in West Africa. Dr. Andy Tatum is a researcher who has been studying this sort of thing to help fight Ebola. He says the latest information is very new.
There's really been no data before on how populations in these West Africa regions are moving around. The only kind of studies that have been done are maybe small-scale studies of an individual settlement or maybe a traffic survey where you're counting the number of cars on a specific road. This gives an entire population across the course of a year and across an entire nation.
Should we be worried about this kind of data tracking? Tatum, again.
We're only working with aggregate level data, so there's no way we can identify individuals. All we're interested in is general patterns of how strongly connected different locations are.
Whether or not organizations can use the information to predict and prevent further spread of Ebola remains to be seen. Now, despite the fact that we are a tech show, we do our best to avoid dealing in rumors and hearsay. But we are also reading about Apple's next big event happening in a few weeks that could perhaps just maybe result in an iPhone 6, among other things. And some are saying a new iPhone could be the gadget of the year. No pressure, Tim Cook. The good news is we know a guy who is up on the rumors, Brian Tong of CNET.
Anything you've heard right now is a rumor. Everything that you think you know and might know or say you know is still a rumor. The only thing we actually still don't officially know if Apple is going to announce the next iPhone on September 9th. We pretty much know they are, but there has been no official word on any of those things.
What is almost definitely true of the iPhone 6?
What is almost definitely true is that we will see a larger screen iPhone. I think that's been the biggest rumor of them all. Everyone that currently owns an iPhone wants an iPhone with a little bigger screen.
When Brian Tong goes to sleep at night and he dreams...
I don't know if I want to tell you these things, Ben.
And he dreams of iPhone sheep. What would you like to see?
For me as a user, without a doubt, the nut that no single company has still yet to crack is a better battery. But not just a better battery, a battery that works 2 to 5 days without a charge, 3 to 5 days without a charge. If someone can deliver on that, oh my goodness.
Sign me up.
Wouldn't you sign up for something like that? The most mundane things are sometimes the best things.
Brian Tong is an editor at CNET and the host of the Apple Bite. Brian, thanks for dreaming with us.
Thanks, Ben. I'll sleep well tonight.
By the way, Apple's also rumored to be working on a 12.9-inch iPad. We'll keep you posted. Yesterday, we talked with PC Magazine columnist Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen about improving agency when it comes to citizen interactions with the police. Today, I want to talk about predictive policing, where big data is being used to try and prevent crime and get law enforcement departments to partner better with communities they police. The success rate depends a lot on how predictive policing is rolled out. Author Patrick Tucker looked at this in his book, The Naked Future, What Happens in a World That Anticipates Your Every Move. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Talk a little bit, if you would, about predictive policing.
Predictive policing is the application of statistics and big data to the challenge of figuring out where or how to deploy police assets in advance of crime trends.
And just like anything else, this can probably be used in really positive ways and really negative ways.
Right. So predictive policing has been used actually to great effect in the city of New York, in some other cities around the country, including Memphis. Now, what I argue is this, is there's a big distinction between the way those two programs played out.
Give me Memphis first.
So in Memphis, there was a researcher. He's a sociologist, and his name is Janikowski. And he partnered with the local police department to pre-deploy assets to places where they thought they were going to be crime, but they went out and they had neighborhood meetings, they went door to door to talk to everybody that they could about this process.
Good old-fashioned police work.
And outreach work. And what he found was that there was a high correlation between Section 8 housing with public assistance and crime. What he found was that people that lived in Section 8 housing were more likely to be the victims of crime, but that being on public assistance did not increase the chances that you were going to commit crime at all. And this, of course, changed the way they decided to deal with this issue of sending police out before they thought that a crime was going to happen.
So when does it go bad, this predictive police work and data crunching?
So the other example is actually the city of New York. New York has had essentially the oldest functioning predictive policing program in the country. We now know that one component of that program, the stop and frisk measure of that, predictive policing played a role in that, in sending cops to places where they were going to stop and frisk people. And now we understand that that wasn't a good use of data, statistics, or algorithms because it while predictive policing may have had an effect on the crime rate, there were a lot of other things that did too. And that portion of it, we now understand to not have had a fantastic effect on the crime rate and also to have been illegal.
Patrick Tucker is a technology editor for Defense One and the author of The Naked Future, What Happens in a World That Anticipates Your Every Move. Patrick, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you.
And before we go, physicists at Chicago's Fermi Lab are working on a problem so theoretical, it's practically from another dimension. The holographic principle suggests that our reality, 3D space, is just a hologram, a sort of reflection of something that is actually two-dimensional. Sounds weird, I know, but it could solve some big problems in theoretical physics. The question, though, is whether scientist beings in the fourth dimension are trying to see if that dimension is just a reflection of ours. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.